As he opened each of her letters and pulled it out, Bobby would think, "This is the last. I won't hear from her again. Kids don't write letters for long, even if they promise they will. There are too many new things coming along. Time goes by so fast, too fast. She'll forget me." But he would not help her to do so. After each of her letters came, he would sit down and write a response. He told her about the house in Brookline his mother sold for $25,000, 6 months' salary at her old job and a single commission. He told her about the A-plus on his English team. He told her about his friend Maury, who was teaching him to play chess. He didn't tell her that sometimes he and Maury went on window-breaking expeditions, riding their bikes — Bobby finally had saved up enough to buy one — as fast as they could past the scuzzy old apartment houses on Plymouth Street, and throwing rocks out of their baskets as they went. He skipped the story of how he had told Mr. Hurley, the assistant principal at Danvers Elementary, to kiss his rosy red ass, and how Mr. Hurley had responded by slapping him across the face and calling him an insolent, wearisome little boy. He didn't confide that he had begun shoplifting, or that he had been drunk 4 or 5 times, once with Maury, the other times by himself, or that sometimes he walked over to the train tracks and wondered if getting run over by the South Shore Express would be the quickest way to finish the job. Just a whiff of diesel fuel, a shadow falling over your face, and then bluey. Or maybe not that quick. Each letter he wrote to Carol ended the same way. "You are sadly missed by your friend, Bobby." Weeks would pass with no mail, not for him. And then there would be another envelope with hearts and teddy bears stuck to the back, another sheet of decal-edged paper, more stuff about skating and baton twirling and new shoes and how she was still stuck on fractions. Each letter was like one more labored breath from a loved one whose death now seemed inevitable. One more breath. Even Sully John wrote him a few letters. They stopped early in 1961, but Bobby was amazed and touched that Sully would try it all. In S.J.'s childishly big handwriting and painful misspellings, Bobby could make out the approach of a good-hearted teenage boy who would play sports and lay cheerleaders with equal joy, a boy who would become lost in the thickets of punctuation as easily as he would weave through the defensive lines of opposing football teams. Bobby thought he could even see the man who was waiting for Sully up ahead in the 70s and 80s, waiting for him the way you'd wait for a taxi to arrive, a car salesman who'd eventually own his own dealership, Honest John's, of course, Honest John's, Harwich Chevrolet. He'd have a big stomach hanging over his belt and lots of plaques on the wall of his office, and he'd coach youth sports and start every pep talk with "Listen up, guys," and go to church and march in parades and be on the city council and all that. It would be a good life, Bobby reckoned. The farm and the rabbits instead of the stick, sharpened at both ends. Although, for Sully, the stick turned out to be waiting after all. It was waiting in Dong Ha Province, along with the old Mama-san, the one who would never completely go away.